C1R.
Number 5B.
Well, we come to the Christ. By this time, I think now that we have already taken 6 questions, answers, and come very quickly to 3 further ones, and then again rather quickly to 3 more, so to say to already 12. I think it is time that perhaps you have this other sheet that we have printed with the questions on it, that you always have that somehow besides your notes. It's nice that you have a lot of space on your table. You can have about 3 different epitomes and charts, left and right of you, so that you can organize your thinking a bit, because as we go on, naturally, it's difficult always to remember. Now, what was question 17? What was question 21? And so on, when we go further. But naturally, we can constantly compare the 3 sets with each other and see what comparison they have, and therefore just have that sheet with all the questions on it ready. We start with the second side of the Holy City, with Christ. What is the Christ? We had that big overall epitome written into our sheet without handwriting, saying God expresses himself. God expresses himself. So the next 6 question will be showing us from the focal point of the Christ, no more from the focal point of the Word, Christ as the expression of God. From the absolute standpoint in Christian Science, we begin to see here what the Christ really wants to express, namely the expression of God as the life-giving substance of divine intelligence. You can see it is not defining God himself, it's defining the way God expresses himself, through what nature God expresses himself. Namely, through life, through substance, through intelligence. These are the 3 next questions which Mrs. Eddy asks. She asks, what is substance, then what is life, and what is intelligence? Now, how shall I explain this now? You see, at this point, as John Dolly has pointed that out, I always must give him credit for the layout of this chapter. It's not my layout, I have taken it from him. He showed that when you start with the Word, as we have done in the first 6 questions, that you start with the Word, then you flow from the Word. Therefore, the subtones were Word, Christ, Christianity. Not science, we said, because if science would be in it, we would have 16 and not 12. It would be on the level of divine science. On the level of Christian science, you have only the 12, the 12 of demonstration. And so the subtones always stop with Christianity, doesn't go further to science. You know, without believing in numerology, but just believing in the Bible. The Bible always saw that when they wanted to bring out demonstration, that they symbolized it through 12. Therefore, there were 12 apostles, and if one would fall out, they would take another one in, so that they were always 12. And in the whole Bible, in the Revelation, wherever in Ezekiel, where numbers are used so often, these numbers were not used as numerology, but as symbols for expressing a divine idea. Just as the 7 days of creation, the seven is not the numerological factor, but is a symbol for perfection. And so all through the Bible, you have seven. Whenever something perfect should be brought out or symbolized, just as other symbols were used, mountains and rocks were used for grand ideas, water was used for the flow of thought, big waters, oceans, was a lot of thoughts, the whole consciousness, the ocean, and the tree was always a principle, and according to which tree they were talking, it was the principle of medicine, or the principle of theology, or the principle of sociology, or anything like that. So in that old time, these symbols stood for abstract ideas. And so not only were natural symbols being used, but also numbers were used to symbolize spiritual qualities. So 12 was always the symbol for demonstration, for perfect demonstration, for Christianity. And it's interesting that the symbol 16 never appears, because the time was not ripe for that. We had to wait until the Christian Science textbook was brought out to see that the higher sense of the Bible is in the textbook and would show now the four by the four. But the Bible only goes as far as Christianity, and therefore as the demonstration of Word, Christ, and Christianity. Why did I say that now? About the 12 something. No. I was saying that because of the order. Yeah. So in the Word, we flow along the order of Word subtone, Christ subtone, Christianity subtone, and there is no science subtone, there where I went off on a tangent. When we come to the Christ now, the Christ starts with itself here. The Christ as a Christ flows further to Christ as Christianity, but as there is no science, it has to take in afterwards the missing link, Word, a Christ as the Word. That's why you have this interesting order here as subtones in the next three questions, that the first question is Christ as Christ, the next one Christ as Christianity, and the third one Christ as the Word. And the reason for it I have shown you. You just flow always along the line, but always leaving out science. Alright, so we come to Christ as Christ, and now we are in absolute Christian Science, and we will get here actually a very absolute sense of the Christ. So we will not get the sense of the Christ as the healing Christ, as the saving Christ, as the Christ that will resurrect us, or anything like that. It is just showing that the Word of God, the first six questions, have now in the next six questions a terrific Christ, and from the standpoint of absolute Christian Science, shows the operational sense of the Christ idea. The Christ as the Christ is the very first subject. The question, interestingly, is called, what is substance? One certainly wouldn't have expected that this would be the question if I would have asked, tell me, what is the Christ as the Christ? I wouldn't have really said, well, that's substance. And here we begin to learn. Here we begin to learn, very much so, then more than in the first six questions, that these questions are just illustrations from a category, and that actually when we have then all three, what is substance, what is life, what is intelligence, put them together, that then we feel the Christ rhythm much more. But if we investigate the answer, then something of that Christ begins to dawn on us. Now, here is another interesting point that we have always to consider when we study the textbook and want to interpret it properly. If I would have asked a student that has had a syllabus class, I would have asked him, what is substance? His answer would have been spirit. And in a way, it's right. In a way, it's right. Because we know that spirit is characterized through the idea that it is substance. But we must remember that such ideas as substance can also be used in defining the four, but not only the seven. And therefore, we must always see that big, big point in interpretation, that the term by itself has no meaning. A term has only meaning by its surrounding context. Only the context gives to a term its proper meaning. In structuralism, one brings this out in a very simple way, which actually everybody should write behind their ears so that they never forget it, that meaning is relational. So that the meaning of a term is relational. It only gathers only its right meaning when we put it into a context. The moment we put it into another context, it loses that meaning and gathers new meaning. And without this insight, really, the textbook is very difficult to interpret. Here, what is substance? We can answer by saying, substance is spirit. And among many other answers that Mrs. Eddy gives here, she also says that spirit is substance. But the rest of the answer is actually more important, and because meaning is relational, it shows that really substance is the Christ as the Christ. Therefore, according to the context, substance gathers a new meaning. Well, in literature today and in every other branch of interpretation, this has become, during the last 10-15 years, common knowledge, that meaning of a term is relational. That's why it's so difficult to have a list of terms in order to characterize anything. It is always a question that one makes up lists, say, the list of the ideas of mind and the list of ideas of spirit, and just have a list of terms. And then one has to be very careful what one understands under these terms, because a term by itself does not define itself. It's not defined. Only through the way it is used, is it a passive form, an active form, is it a noun, is it a verb, whatever it is, in which connotation it is used, in which context it is used, it gathers different meaning. Therefore, also you can see that when you study the seven synonymous terms, you come across ideas that you feel, well, they belong to mind just as much as they belong to life. And then you wonder why. Because if they are really characterizing one synonymous term, they shouldn't characterize the other synonymous term, or there would be no differentiation. But soon you will learn that such a term, like for instance, that mind maintains and life maintains that they mean something very different. That you can, for instance, see that mind maintains, because in order to maintain, you need power to maintain. Without power, you can't maintain anything. So if one wants to bring out, really, that there is a power that can maintain men or anything, then maintain is certainly a quality of mind. The moment you ask yourself, is the universe maintained and sustained and provided, when you don't ask, is there a power that can do that, but is there something there that constantly feeds it in and always maintain what there is, then you certainly have life that maintains. Because you don't ask there, what is the power, but you give the fullness of life, which says, it always maintains, it always maintains. You see, it's always maintained. And so, these terms, according to the context they are used, according to what connotation we give to a term, they are classified differently. Which all shows that the English language, just any human language, cannot decode the textbook. We have to learn the language of spirit, and that language of spirit is trained within ourselves by knowing the tonality of the seven synonymous term, by knowing the tonality of Word, Christ, Christianity and Science, by knowing the tonality of Christian Science, Absolute Christian Science, Divine Science, Science itself. That is the language of spirit. And with that language, we can read the text. So here it's perhaps a very unique and clear example that Mrs. Eddy does not answer the question, what is substance, through the seven synonymous term, but through that other category, the category of the four, and says, yes, that's the Christ idea. Why? And she explains it the way she wants it to be explained. So if you take that text, perhaps we even read it together, because it's such a short text that we can explain it even perhaps a bit better. So the answer is not what we would have answered, that it is the substance of spirit. Substance is that which is eternal and incapable of discord and decay. It already indicates, really, on the level of Absolute Christian Science, the Christ, which says it will never change. The Christ will always uphold it. It will never be, it is incapable of discord and decay. Then he shows where or from where does substance come from. Not only what it is, but also where it comes from. And she says, truth, life and love are substance. Now we know only too well from the textbook that truth, life and love are the Christ in Absolute Christian Science. That naturally we have to know, that is the result of our investigation, that on the level of Absolute Christian Science, the word is life, truth and love, that the Christ is on Absolute Christian Science truth, life and love, that Christianity on the absolute level is life and love, and that science on the level of Absolute Christian Science is truth and love. We have studied that through the whole textbook, and found out, really, that truth, life and love is the Christ in the absolute sense, because it says what? It says, I am the big ideal, truth, that individualizes itself, life. And you must naturally have a Christ in order to individualize the ideal. because a Christ alone expresses the whole in the individual form. And so the moment you have truth life, truth individualized, you have a Christ-sense love adapted to the situation, but only the Christ idea can do that. So we see it's the Christ idea that she depicts here as truth, life, and love, our substance, as the scripture used the word in Hebrews, the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. And then goes on and says, spirit. Now, she translates it, you see, to the nature of God and says, spirit, the synonym for mind, soul, or God, is the only real substance. It's the only real substance. Can you see? She translates from absolute Christian science, the essence, to the nature of that substance, and says substance is anyway always the nature of God, therefore it must be those three first synonymous terms, namely spirit, mind, and soul, which is the only real substance. So, can you see, here she defines the synonyms as substance. He goes on, the spiritual universe, including individual men. See, it must include individual men, because truth, life, and love have individualized the Christ. So, including individual men is a compound idea reflecting the divine substance of spirit. So, what does the Christ do? What does she say the Christ do? She says it takes from that high reservoir of truth, life, and love the faculty of translating the ideal truth into individual situation, that is perfect love, and brings it out, the moment you have, and brings it out, that's the Christ expression, doesn't stay up there and says it's only God. It translates itself to the substance of the universe, and therefore translated to mind, soul, spirit, to the universe, including individual men, to the compound idea man, reflecting the divine substance of spirit. We would never get the reflection of God without the Christ expressing it, translating it. Yes? So you get a terrific sense of the absolute value of the Christ as the Christ. As that Christ which says, I take God and express God by translating God to the point of the universe. That's the Christ. And here it is shown through that substance of spirit. Okay, we go to the next one. Having shown Christ, as a translating office from absolute Christian science, we come to the Christ as Christianity. Therefore, we must have in that Christ a subtone that indicates more Christianity, that indicates much more, therefore, the eternal universe, because universe is at the point of Christianity. Can you see? Showing that Christ is translating itself to an everlasting universe, to an unchanging, everlasting universe. And so her question is here, what is life? What is life? Showing what? Our epitome is that Christ in Christianity eternalizes the substance of spirit. It takes the Christ as a Christ. What is spirit? What is substance? Showing that substance is spirit and spiritual. Now, Christianity says to that, I eternalize it. I make it an eternal state of things. So it eternalizes what has been translated. And we get much more that sense of Christianity here. Again, let's take the text and read it together. And reading it together, perhaps we can see it a bit clearer.